Hello and good morning. Today is Wednesday, May 18th, and I'm Jamie from Stonemaier Games. I'm here, as usual, every Wednesday to chat with you for about an hour, to answer your questions, to share Stonemaier Games news and what we're working on here at Stonemaier Games, and to discuss some random topics, like chocolate of the day. Maybe I'll start with that so I don't forget today's chocolate of the day. What are you indulging in today? What is your treat of the day? Whether it's food or anything that that makes you feel good, it gives you a little bit of joy. I have game night tonight, so that'll be part of the joy of my day today, as is my work and my time with you right now. But my chocolate, let's see, I bought some chocolate from a place in St. Louis called Honeymoon Chocolates that recently opened a shop in Clayton, St. Louis, if you know where that is. And we stopped by there and got some chocolate bars, and they are really delicious. Even the dark chocolate is super, super creamy and not as bitter as 70% dark chocolate can sometimes be. Really enjoying that. Good morning, Dominic. Thanks for joining me today. What is going on today? So I have a few things to show you. In fact, I'll just start showing them to you because MeepleSource is running a Kickstarter campaign right now for custom player tokens shaped like different birds of the world. For Wingspan. It's completely independent of Stonemaier Games. It's their own thing. But they were very kind to send a bunch of samples to me, and I thought I'd share them today. I'll just hold them up here and share all of them. Let me know your favorite. I'll do it pretty quickly because there are a lot. Here's the Common Ostrich, the Magnificent Frigate Bird, the Golden Pheasant. That's a pretty one. The Asian Fairy Bluebird. That's pretty too. There's so many of these. Hyacinth Macaw. Good morning, George. Good morning, Tony. As if you're tuning in right now, these are custom bird tokens created by MeepleSource for the Kickstarter campaign that they're currently running. You can back the campaign to get everything if you want, or you can back for $1 and then decide later exactly which tokens you want. Like they made way more than you'll ever need for a game of Wingspan because you only need enough for your current player count. Here's the Greater Roadrunner. But I don't know, it's nice to have a little bit of variety with these tokens. In the core game, we just include cubes, and so it's kind of fun to see third-party accessory companies like MeepleSource make all sorts of custom tokens like this. You'd think that I'd be done by now, but I'm not. I still have a lot more, and hopefully I don't spoil anything that I'm not supposed to show, but they sent me all these, and I think they said that I'll have to share them. Here's the Blood Pheasant. The Harpy Eagle, this is a very interesting looking bird, the Harpy Eagle. The Philippine Eagle, here's another eagle here. And if you're listening to this, you're probably not getting anything out of it, but I'll try to keep talking. The Great Hornbill, listening instead of watching. Here's the blue and yellow macaw, a couple macaws in here. Susanna says that she likes the Indian peafowl. Well, I'll save that one for you, Susanna, you can have that one. Yeah, I'll be giving away some of these at game night tonight because I don't even need all of these by any means. But I'm definitely going to keep, for me, I usually play red in games, so I'm going to keep a few of the ones that are a little more red. Here are a few that are a little more red in there. But yeah, I bet you can find a bird for your player color somewhere in here. If you like to play yellow, here's a lovebird. So that's adorable. Two little birds there. And we're down to the last few. Australian Magpie. Nice. And, oh, the biggest pack in here, the Wandering Albatross. Look how big this one is. This is giant because this bird is so big. I think this might have one of the bigger wingspans in the world of all the birds. Yeah, those are all the birds in the MeepleSource Bird Meeple Kickstarter campaign that's going on right now. And one of the nice things I saw about it is that, like I mentioned, even if you want to get all the birds, you can get all the birds by doing that, or you can just back for $1 and choose later exactly which birds are right for you, which I think is a nice way to run a campaign of this style. So I spent a lot of time over the last few days at Geekway to the West in St. Louis and had a blast there. I basically went between meals every day because it wasn't a fully masked convention. It was fully vaccinated, boost recommended, but not fully masked. I stayed in the fully masked area and I stayed fully masked while I was there at all times. And so I ate before I got there and I left and then went home and ate dinner. But I played a lot of games. I played 8 new games to me. And I'll show you some photos real quickly if you're watching right now to see what I played. So here is Origins First Builders. Here is Picture Perfect. And yesterday I spent all day. Here is Key to the Kingdom, the new Key to the Kingdom. I spent all, well, not all day yesterday. I spent quite a bit of time yesterday filming videos with my about my favorite mechanisms for each of these games while they're fresh on my mind, as well as a top eight video for this coming weekend featuring my the rankings of how I would rank these games in terms of my experience. I think the best way that I put it was at the end of the video, which I filmed yesterday, this is the order of how likely I am to play each of these games again. Here's Wonderland's War. I've just shown you photos. I missed the last few. Here's the Wonderland's War, Ethnos, I forgot to say, Boon Lake, The Hunger, Noctiluca, and then I mentioned the previous three. Yeah, so that's what I stayed busy doing at Geekwood of the West. Had a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone who came up and said hi, who chatted for a few minutes, or even played a game with me. Played games with a wide variety of people that I normally don't get to play games with, and that was a lot of fun. I really appreciate those, especially those who taught, but also anyone who joined in and was part of that experience. I had a blast. Nier says, I hope today I'm actually live and not an hour late. And Nier tried to tune in and was wondering why I wasn't answering his questions, and it was because it was a few hours later. But yes, Nier, I am live right now. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have. Nathan says, greetings from LA. How was your play at Boon Lake? I was finally able to squeeze in a play on Sunday morning, but we had to return it to the library before we could completely finish. Yeah, Nathan, I had the pleasure of playing two games with Nathan. We played Origins First Builders and The Hunger, I believe, were the games that I played with Nathan. I did enjoy Boon Lake quite a bit, Nathan. It was a longer game, probably longer than I would normally choose for Geekway, but it's also nice at Geekway that there's so much time there that it is a nice environment to play some longer games. And I really did enjoy Boon Lake, particularly for a longer game that it included a follow mechanism. So whenever one player was taking their core action of their turn, all other players could simultaneously take the follow action associated with that core action, which really reduced the downtime to almost nothing in a game that needed to reduce downtime to almost nothing, given how long it was. Yeah. And Nier had the same question, what I think of Boon Lake. And George had the same question about Boon Lake too. Maybe I should bump that one up on my video list, given that people are interested about that one. I've prioritized the videos for these games. Let's see what the order is. This Friday, so I'll talk about Wonderland's War this Friday. And then I have Boon Lake coming up on May 24th. So I think that's next Tuesday, followed by The Hunger. And then I have the other ones coming later. I release videos on Tuesdays and Fridays. And sometimes I've been doing kind of, I would say, less buzzworthy games on Saturday. I have a bunch of backed up videos, so I've been releasing some of those older videos on Saturdays for games that aren't really a part of the current gaming discussion, but I still think they're worth discussing because every game has at least one interesting mechanism in it. Bridge City Collective said, Noctiluca hits me really hard with analysis paralysis. We had a little bit of a moment with that too, although I really enjoyed Noctiluca. Noctiluca is an abstract game. Here, I'll pull it up while I'm talking about it. It's an abstract dice drafting game where you're using the dice to put them on these cards by color. And so you have this spread out here of all these random dice that are put out there. They're randomly rolled, randomly placed, and you will choose a column of dice, and you'll name a number. You'll say a number, and you will gather all dice that share that number. And as you can tell, think about doing that right now. So if I told you, pick the dice that you need, and pick a number that is optimal to get all those dice that you need, and as many dice as possible, it's a lot to consider. There's a lot of different rows and columns to consider in there. But it is possible to do, and eventually you have to almost be okay with saying, okay, I know that I need two green dice and one blue die. I see how I can get that with this number in this column, even though I'm getting all these other dice that I don't need, and I'm okay with that. That can speed up the play a little bit if you get caught in the middle of that. Nier says, he has a question about Tapestry. Was it always the plan to have Civ adjustments an ongoing thing, or was it an outcome based on feedback from players after the release? Oh, it was definitely always the plan for Tapestry to have that living element to it. And the kind of the proof of that is that I printed it in the rulebook itself, the very original rulebook. On the last page, it says, we would love for you to report your scores, your winning scores for Tapestry and your winning Civs, so on our website so that we can learn from that data over time. I knew when I printed that in the rulebook that it would be somewhat controversial. I think some people would interpret that as, oh, they didn't playtest this enough. Whereas, in fact, we playtested Tapestry a ton before we released it. But I kind of knew in a game like Tapestry, where you have different combinations of civs and capital cities, lesser impact with the original capital cities, but different combinations of civs and tapestry cards and tech cards. There's a lot that can happen. There's a lot that that we tried to find in playtesting, but I think it's impossible when you have that many moving variable parts to figure out every possible scenario. And so I wanted to leave the game open to continually getting feedback from players. So yeah, that was the plan from the very beginning. I was hoping that we wouldn't need to adjust anything, of course. I was hoping that we got it exactly right the first time, but I think having those adjustments, I mean, really, one of the inspirations for it was Terra Mystica. I love Terra Mystica. I am not bothered by certain factions being slightly more or less powerful in Terra Mystica, but I do remember after the game came out that pretty quickly there was a lot of data and people were starting to rank factions based on how many points that they average, their win rates, things like that. And there was no official way of for the Terra Mystica creators to get that data. They kind of were just relying on fans to compile it and using that data. So I figured, okay, in a game that is not unlike Terra Mystica in terms of the asymmetry, I would really love for a way to officially gather this data so that we can use it. Yeah. I will say that the one thing, I'm answering a lot more than you wanted here, but it was not the plan to ever actually reprint any of the civilizations. I was just hoping to include small adjustments that we could include in the expansions and things like that on, in a printable guide. But the final plan right now that I've come to is that I think we're at the point in Tapestry where we know enough, we have enough data that we can confidently make final adjustments to some of the civilizations and actually reprint the civilization mats for just once. Just do it once. Like, this will not be a continual thing that we do. So we're currently gathering data for those adjustments. I have a post about that in the Tapestry group and on BoardGameGeek if you're interested. You probably are aware of that though. Matthew says that his wife and I got ourselves one of the new puzzles. It's great so far, but now we'll have to buy the other two. I'm glad you're enjoying it, Matthew. I heard from one person, and this might even be your wife, who said that she tried the 500-piece puzzle, had a lot of fun with it, and then tried the 1,500-piece puzzle and was like, oh, wow, that was a big jump. I kind of wish I had done the 1,000-piece puzzle in between. They definitely level up. Megan and Christine designed them so that the 500-piece puzzle is fairly easy. And then it gets pretty difficult for the 1,000-piece, and then it'll take a lot of time, I think, to work through that 1,500-piece puzzle. But I'm glad you're having fun with it. Nir says, when do you think the final adjustments are going to be published? I think there'll be a few steps to it. We are currently analyzing the data, and we will probably propose what we think the final adjustments will be publicly. This will be a very public procedure. We'll propose that. And then we will, once we decide that they are final, we will reveal all those things. We'll just have them up on our website. I think what you're asking though is when will we actually publish the reprinted versions of any of the civs in Tapestry that need a final adjustment? And that will take quite a bit of time. Any production these days takes 5 to 6 months. So I think we're probably looking at 8 to 9 months down the road to get through that entire process. Yeah. Bridge City Collective says that the huge variety in Tapestry is why it's in my top 10. I'm honored to hear that. I'm glad you enjoy it so much. Melissa says, I'm hoping you guys can finish the Tapestry Digital. I love the Scythe one on Steam that she has. Yeah, I love it. I should clarify, it's not us working on Tapestry Digital, but that we do have a company working on Tapestry Digital. I got an update actually just the other day from them, and they said that they are getting close to having something to show us. So I'm excited about that. I think that still means that the game is a long way away, but I know that they're actively working on it. I'm excited to see what they do with it as well. A full AI version of Tapestry. Tim is here. Tim is the one who taught me Boon Laking. I got to play Boon Lake with Tim and his wife. He says, had a nice weekend playing Boon Lake with you. Hope the disc golf was good. Yeah, I decided after 3 days of Geekway and kind of being not stuck inside, but inside, I decided to get outside on Sunday and play disc golf, and I didn't go back to Geekway that day. But Tim, it was great playing games with you, or playing Boon Lake specifically with you and your wife. Great to spend time with you, and thank you for coming all the way out here to St. Louis to play games with us. Walter is staring behind me here. You can see it. So I can kind of feel when Walter's behind me. He has been back here for a few minutes. So let me give him some food. Yeah, he'll get some food. Here we go. The Excel Gamer says, my mother got her Wingspan puzzle for Mother's Day. She truly loves it and appreciates you and your work. Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Yeah, we kind of timed it a little bit for Mother's Day. We figured it could be a fun way to spend time with your mother on Mother's Day, or to send something to your mother if you aren't able to be with her on Mother's Day, which was a few weekends ago. Some blog topics. Actually, a video. I talked about videos earlier. What was my video for this past weekend? This past weekend, I talked about Clank. The top 10 things I've learned from Clank. So I've been doing a video series every now and then. I did one for Ark Nova, one for Role Player Adventures, where I do a deep dive into the design of a game and what I have learned from playing a game many, many times. There aren't many games that will qualify for this video series. They have to be games that I really love, that I have learned a lot from. Oh, and I did one from Gloomhaven Jaws of the Lion as well. That was one of the first ones. But it is interesting to do these really deep dives into games and to break them apart, mostly from a design standpoint, but also a little bit from a publisher and art component theme standpoint. So I did one of those for Clank this past weekend. And the blog post I did this over the last, since the last live cast, were, I did one about all-in bundles and why I'm not a huge fan of all-in bundles, but I've had a lot of people ask me for all-in bundles, so I wanted to analyze if there was something key that I was missing. It was basically all-in bundles versus just offering all the stuff a la carte, as we currently do. Like, if you want all side stuff, we have it available on our website for you to buy, but we don't bundle it together because we want you to be able to pick and choose exactly what you want and not make you feel like you need to spend $300 to get all the side stuff. You can kind of just pick and choose, and when your budget is ready to add stuff, you can. And I also did a blog post about how we polled Stonemaier champions who did not pre-order Libertalia to learn from that experience, to learn why they didn't pre-order Libertalia Winds of Galecrest, and to see if there's anything that we needed to learn to apply kind of systemically across all Stonemaier games stuff, or maybe just to certain games or just to Libertalia. So I did a blog post that about that, just about the general topic of how and when and to whom to ask why you didn't buy this thing. Like, we kind of thought you might buy this thing and you didn't. So why? What can we learn from you in that instance? So we did that for Libertalia. Matthew says that he finally got to play Rolling Realms, and he absolutely loves it. It plays fast, but it's satisfyingly strategic. I'm glad you're having fun with that, Matt. Oh, Matthew. I have seen a Matt show up in the comments of YouTube who seems to be playing against me live. Is that you, or is that somebody else? And if it's not you, feel free to join my various live cast for Rolling Realms, or go back on YouTube and play against me round by round to see if you can beat some of my scores. I think the next session will be, when do I have it? I think I have it scheduled for Friday. The next live. Yeah, Friday afternoon, I will do my next live class. So it'll probably be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I'll do live cast for Rolling Realms. Also, this Thursday, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, let's see, looking at my other screen here. 3 o'clock, yeah, 3 o'clock, we're doing Chapter 2 of the book club for a crowdfunder's strategy guide. So right here on the Stonemaier Games Facebook page at 3 o'clock Central Time, we're going to discuss the chapter, The Crowd is the New Gatekeeper. You don't have to have read the book to join this live cast. It's totally optional. But if you are curious about crowdfunding and entrepreneurship, feel free to join that live cast. It'll be shorter than what I'm doing right now. It'll be around 30 minutes where I go through the chapter and I look at how the things that I mentioned in the chapter apply today, because I wrote the book around 8 years ago. And I also answer any questions, or kind of, I want to actually throw more questions out to the people watching this time. So hopefully it'll be a little bit more of an ongoing discussion back and forth rather than me just talking about stuff. That's what I hope to get out of these live book club discussions. And if you aren't able to see that live, it'll still be on the Facebook page, and I will put it on the YouTube channel later that day. The Excel Gamer says, so I loved your info on PAX Premier 2nd Edition. It is definitely one of my favorite games. However, I know that it deals with topics that I know very little about and could be a topic that some people find sensitive to them or others. How do you deal with games that can deal with topics that might be intense and controversial? I have a big video about this. I think if you search my YouTube channel for maybe the words controversial or controversy, you might see that. And I'm still, honestly, I'm still learning about it. Like, just the other day, we got our replacement cards pack for the South American continent for Viticulture World. You can see we have the new cards for the South America continent. This was something that I wouldn't say that we missed it. We knew that it was problematic, and I implemented the solution that I thought was right for that continent, and it wasn't the right one. In hindsight, I don't think that was the right solution, and so I'm still learning about it myself. I think a cultural consultant can help. It didn't help particularly with the South American continent, but it can help to get a cultural consultant who knows more about the various cultures of the world than I do, and that is able to research past the blind spots that I might have. I think that's one way to go. But I also think it's good to, I don't know, do your research and talk to people who are willing to talk about and review the materials that you have, who are maybe closer to or more closely connected to the cultures and the game that you're making. Or you can not include real world history in your game at all, not include real world people, not real world events, things like that, and kind of play it a little bit more safe that way. Even then, I think it's important to keep in mind how the characters and cultures and representation in your game might connect to the real world, even if it is in a fictional universe or in an alternate history, for example. But I think it's you can avoid certain topics, like you mentioned in PAX Premier, that you would otherwise run into if you're using a directly historical theme. Yeah. George says, what do you think about wood components in future game production? I think that wood will be the next premium thing in the future as the wood supply in general is getting worse. So the wooden meeples from classic games might seem unfashionable now, but they will be expensive in time. We can already start to see that. George, so I don't know. I think we've seen a little bit of that, but I think it's due more to supply chain issues and increasing labor costs than it is to wood itself increasing in cost. I think the wonderful thing about wood compared to plastic is that wood grows back. If you sustainably harvest and forest or use sustainable forestry techniques, then the wood is going to grow back over time, unlike natural resources, which may come back over many thousands of years. But the oil that we're pumping out of the ground now is limited. It is finite, opposed to wood, which will grow back. So I think what we'll probably see, we might see a slight increase in cost. I think we've seen a little bit of that, but I don't think we'll see a scarcity of wood like we see in other types of components. Yeah. Bridge City Collective says they are launching their first Kickstarter next week. We really appreciate all of your open resources and blog posts. Thank you so much. I appreciate you hearing that. I hope you've had some, found some good utility in the resources that I've created for my fellow creators. And feel free to below it, since you're talking about it and since you're here, feel free to link to the preview page for your Kickstarter page in the comments below if you'd like to share that. I should mention that my shirt today is from Unique You T-Shirts on Etsy. It is actually designed by one of the co-designers of Viticulture World, Mihir Shah. He designs this shirt, and I am wearing it because at game night tonight, I might need 5 extra victory points, so I want to have this shirt ready just in case. Tony says that his group played Picture Perfect at our game night last evening, and it was a big hit. I really enjoyed the different game elements of placing the people, meeting their demands, totally different than anything we can remember. And I'll hold this up so people can know what we're talking about. Here is Picture Perfect, which I played at Geekway to the West. It's a game where you are using deduction to place people based on their different preferences around a dinner table. And then at the end of the game, you take a photo of all these different people and dogs and plants around a dinner table in the hopes that you score the most points for each of them based on what they want. Tony says, can you think of a game with a really different gameplay element that caught your attention or made you love the game? Let's see. I'll look through the most recent games to see if there's something that really jumped out to me as strikingly unique. Because, I mean, there are mechanisms in all these games that I really enjoyed. I thought this was clever. This was clever. It isn't an entirely new mechanism. But in Boon Lake, you can see this upgrade system I thought was really clever. So in many games, including Boon Lake, there are actions or bonuses that you can activate once per round. But I think Boon Lake's component implementation of how they did that is really clever. Basically, you have this board that shows all the bonuses that you could someday get once per round, but you need to add a switch to them. You need to add this little token right here. And to show, and so you add it using different bonuses, different benefits. And to show that you use that benefit, you just slide the switch down to cover the benefit. So it feels like a little switchboard, kind of. You're moving these switches down, and then you get to refresh them at the end of the round. Just a nice, I definitely not an innovative mechanism, but an innovative use of a component, and an easy way to see if you have or haven't used those benefits in the current round. Quince says, "What board game award would you wish to win?" Quince, that's an interesting question. I really am not motivated at all by awards. My entire motivation is to bring joy to tabletops worldwide. That motivates me by far more than, way more than any award. Really, awards don't motivate me at all. I guess the one answer I could give is that there are some People's Choice Awards where people, gamers vote on games that bring them a lot of joy that they really enjoy. And so for those types of awards, that it feels good when that's a quantifiable way of a bunch of people saying you brought us joy through this game. And so any form of People's Choice Awards feels good to me to receive. Yeah. Although not even to me, like I love when I see one of our games from other designers, like Wingspan, when Wingspan wins an award, a People's Choice Award. That's great to see. I love seeing that for Elizabeth and Anna and Natalia and Team Altama, everyone who put all the time and effort into that, including myself. I put a lot of time and effort into Wingspan, but it's neat to see that for other people, the people who are involved on an even deeper level for Wingspan. Here we go. Bridge City Collective is sharing their brand new Zoo Kickstarter, which is coming up next week. Josh is here. I got to play a game with Josh over at Geekway. Played two games. Josh, I was just talking about Noctiluca and Key to the Kingdom. It was great to play games with you at Geekway to the West. I'm so glad you were able to attend. I will say it was really handy for Stonemaier ambassadors who were at Geekway to wear their Stonemaier ambassador t-shirt. They're really easy to spot that way. I can spot them and come up and say hi and thank them for being an ambassador. And I actually saw a lot of Stonemaier Champion t-shirts around there too, especially the one with the St. Louis Arch on it. That was one that was very commonly seen at Geekway. I think partially because Geekway is held in St. Louis. Chris says, "I had a great time at Geekway. It was nice to meet you." It was great to meet you too, Chris. Yeah, that was, it was just wonderful to meet so many people at Geekway. He says, "My favorite game of the con was Phantom Inc. I also really enjoyed Ark Nova." I have played Phantom Inc. Recently. I hadn't played it at Geekway, and I've played Ark Nova a bunch at this point. I'll spoil it a little bit. I've been telling people that they should wait until I release this Sunday's video for my kind of my rankings on how likely I am to play any of the games that I played at Geekway again. And the number one game was Wonderlands War. I really enjoyed Wonderlands War and look forward to playing that again, especially if I can play the deluxe version, which has really nice tokens. Chris says his wife and I, in fact, speaking of Wonderlands War, here's Chris and his wife Kim are two of the people that I got to play Wonderlands War with at Geekway. He says, "My wife and I enjoyed playing Wonderlands War with you over the weekend. Thank you for inviting us to play it with you. It was the highlight of our convention." Oh, that means thank you, Chris, for saying that. It was wonderful to meet you too and to actually sit down and play a game with you. It's one of my favorite things at Geekway, and it was you two were in particular were a lot of fun to play that particular game with. So thanks for spending your time with me. I think it took us around 3 hours to play Wonderlands War, but it was a fun 3 hours, and we had a great teacher too. The Excel Gamer says, "What were your thoughts on Wonderlands War?" Just talking about that, just a high level overview of your thoughts. So if you're not aware of it, Wonderlands War is a it's a game a little bit like Quacks of Quedlinburg, where there's push your luck and bag building. And there's also an area control aspect where you have these little battles over different areas of the board using your units there. And I love the card draft. There's a card draft that helps you get some bonuses and helps you get more tokens into your bag. I thought the card draft and the rondel system with that worked really well. I love the combat track. Here, I'll mention one favorite thing real quick about the combat track. For each battle, you move a token along this combat track to show how much strength that you have acquired for that battle. And if the battle when the battle ends, when you're done pulling stuff out of your bag, if you have the most power on that track, you win the battle. However, very cleverly, on that track, at certain places, are icons that say, if you stop here, If you stop accumulating more power or strength, whatever the resource is, in this battle, you will get an upgrade. You get a forge token, or you get a free forge, which is a permanent ongoing upgrade on your player mat. And so the game is kind of saying, it's kind of asking you to consider stopping the battle, stopping your portion of the battle to get that enticing thing. And it's really interesting. It feels good if you're like behind in the battle, because you're like, okay, I'm so far behind, I will just try to get up to one of these forge tokens so I can get this free forge. And even if you're ahead on the battle, it makes you stop and wonder, okay, I'm ahead right now. I probably could keep going. I'm safe to keep going based on the board state. And I'm right at this forge icon. Maybe I should stop right now. Maybe I'm safe. Maybe I should stop. Just a little enticement to stop in a battle that I thought was really, really clever. I really enjoyed that aspect of Wonderland's War. Yeah. Nier says that he likes the factory system in Boon Lake, a unique way to have resources without explicitly making them. Yes, absolutely. That actually was my favorite mechanism in the game too. In Boon Lake, I don't have a great photo of it, but in Boon Lake, you're not accumulating resource tokens. Rather, you have access to between 0 and 4 of 4 different types of resources based on little boats that you can move down a river to match with those resources, and little tokens, little factories that Nier is referring to, that just give you those resources whenever you need them. So you're not collecting them. You're not accumulating resources. You just are gaining and sometimes losing access to resources that you need to play cards. I thought it was a really clever system, and it was a great reminder to me that there are many ways to account for resources in games beyond just resource tokens that you're accumulating. Ernst says, I see you recently played Rumble Nation. What a cool little game. Any other foreign, non-English release games that you've played and would recommend? Ooh, that's a good question. And I really did enjoy Rumble Nation. It's a game from Japan that my coworker Alex acquired, and we've played it a couple times at this point. And really, it is a fantastic area control game. If you like games like El Grande, or really any area control game, I would highly recommend Rumble Nation. Let's see. Any other ones that I would recommend? I'm sure there are. So one recent one that I played, or that I didn't play recently, but has come up on my mind recently, is Yukio, which sounds like a Japanese game. It is a Japanese theme, but it's actually made by Walnut Games in the UK. And they either have a new Kickstarter for it, or they're launching a new Kickstarter soon for it. But that's one that had, you know, a very small print run. It was made in the UK. And I think Joe may have recommended it to me. And I played it and really enjoyed it. That's another, it's foreign in that, you know, it's from a different country and themed based on another separate country. So Yukio, yeah, I'll say Yukio. There are many other games though that are definitely made outside of the US that I very much enjoy. I have one right now. I have a German version of Wizard. So I don't have the English rules for Wizard in the box, but I do love Wizard. Maybe I'll play Wizard again tonight. I really do love Wizard, the ramping up mechanism to it. Greg says, thanks again for helping out with the Geek Gold. Yeah, I give it for any Stonemaier champion. You can, if you don't have any Geek Gold, to get a Stonemaier champion badge on BoardGameGeek, you can message me on BoardGameGeek and I'll send you some Geek Gold. He says, not sure if this question was asked, but do you have any initial impressions on the Azul Master Chocolatier Edition that was announced? You know, I have no idea what that is, but you said the magic word chocolate, and I need to find out what's going on with that. Let's see what Azul. Okay, so it looks like, what is it? They're pieces designed after gourmet chocolates. It'll be a limited edition version that replaces the candy-esque pieces with ones that look like tempered chocolate in little wrappers and tins. I don't see any photos here. But yeah, that sounds right up my alley. Yeah. Okay. I see the photo in the background here. I'm looking at Dicebreaker. Here, I'll post the link so you can see what I'm looking at. And they do look like adorable little chocolates. That sounds awesome. I don't own the original Azul, so that might be a good opportunity for me to get the original Azul. I own the Summer Pavilion version. That's my favorite version of Azul. But I might need to get the chocolate version. Yeah. Corey is here too. Corey says, it was great meeting you at Geekway and playing The Hunger with you and your group. Thanks for signing my Scythe misprint comic card. Have you had the chance to try the dandelion jelly yet? I'm glad you asked, Corey. Corey was very kind to give me a little jar of, or really a big jar, it'll last a long time, of dandelion jelly, which I've never had before. And Corey, just a couple days ago, I made fancy grilled cheese sandwiches with sharp white cheddar, a couple eggs, white bread with some Irish butter, and I included some honey on some local honey on one side of the bread, and I included the your dandelion jelly on the other side, and it was really, really delicious. Adding that little sweetness to the saltiness of the grilled cheese was delicious, and I will be making many other grilled cheese sandwiches with your dandelion jelly. So thank you so much for sharing that. I really appreciate that, and it was fun to play the hunger with you as well. Oh, Corey says, forgot to mention the ingredients in case of food allergies: dandelion petals, sugar, lemon juice, and fruit pectin. Yeah, no, none of those. I didn't run into any issues with any of those, but I appreciate you letting me know. I don't think I've ever eaten anything with dandelion in it before, so it was one of those opportunities to discover a new allergy, but it fortunately was not there. Chris says, have I seen the Kickstarter for expansions for Ontor and QE? I played QE for the first time at Geekway. QE is a lot of fun. I really enjoy QE. I rarely get it to the table anymore, but I really do enjoy the game. And I have seen the Kickstarter for Ontor QE. I think the Kickstarter includes a bunch of different expansions from Board Game Table's publishing wing. I haven't necessarily felt the need for expansions for Ontor. In fact, honestly, I'm looking at my shelf right now. I have not gotten Ontor or QE to the table for a long time, and they might be bumping up against the threshold that I have, where if I have not played a game for a year and I don't think that I'll play it again in the future, I get rid of it, which will be really hard to do with those two games because I really, really enjoy those two games. I'm looking at them yearningly right now. So maybe I need to actually get them to the table so that I don't have to give them away with my year requirement. What about you all? Do you have what are your rules for culling games from your collection? I try to keep a fairly tight collection. I have a small shelf of small box games, quick games usually. I have a 4x4 Kallax shelf over here that you can't see because it has some spoilers on it, but 4x4 Kallax shelf that I try to keep limited to the 4x4 grid. And my rule is if I play a game that I don't see myself playing again, I usually give it away fairly quickly. If I have a game on my shelf that I have not played in a year and I don't see myself playing it in the very near future, I give that away as well. And yeah, I guess those are the two rules. I also have a shelf of opportunity of games that I haven't played. Right now it has maybe a dozen games on it. And I have a Stonemaier shelf as well. But what are your rules for keeping your collection as small as you want it to be, if that is a priority for you? Maybe you never give games away. That's okay too. The Excel Gamer says, speaking of Rumble Nation, I'm hoping to get a copy of that game. I love everything about it, and your video did a great job of explaining it. Another foreign game that I love is Four Gardens. The US finally got copies in English. Four Gardens. I think, is that the one with a tower? Is that the game with the tower? I saw some friends playing that at Geekway recently. Sounds like Josh also got to play some games with Corey, fellow ambassadors connecting at Geekway. I'd love to hear that. The Excel Gamer says, I do not cull games. In my opinion, if the games provide me joy even by owning and not playing, then I want to keep it. Okay, provide me joy. Okay, I see. Yes, totally fine. Yeah, I'm not judging anyone who wants to keep games. Just like games, we are collectors, I think, inherently as gamers. We have that collector's feel to it. And so there are many games. There are games on my shelf that I have just because I like having them. But I also want to make sure that I play them every now and then. That's just me. I like to be able to play the games every now and then. Nier says that he has his rule is that everything needs to fit on a 5x5 Kallax shelf. If it bursts, then he needs to sell the game. How do you choose which game to actually sell in that instance, though? Do you have any requirements or guidelines to go by for that? Hector says, I only allow myself one or two of the same main mechanism, and of course, I refuse to buy another shelf. I like that method too. So if you have a I don't know, it's hard to say worker placement because there are lots of great worker placement games. But if you have a few trick-taking games that you really, really enjoy, that you only have a few of them on your shelf, that you won't get a third trick-taking game. Or if you do, then you bump one of the two that you already have. Am I explaining that correctly, Hector? I can definitely see that making sense. The Excel Gamer clarifies that yes, the Four Gardens game is the one with the tall pagoda tower. And I didn't get to play it, but I saw some friends playing that. Krista says, I only cull games if I didn't enjoy them or if I run out of shelf space. And I'll throw that question back at you too, Krista. How do you decide then which games to actually cull? Corey says, for your information, I created a board game arena account last night so we can continue to play together through multiple time zones over next week. Okay, I think Corey is talking to Josh here in the comments. Ernst says, we have too many games for sure. We have games that we have because they are collector's editions. And then we have games that we play at least once a month. And I'm currently busy checking games on BG Stats that we haven't played in the last year. But playing Magic the Gathering has definitely informed my views on collecting. I can definitely relate to that back in the day. Nier says he has a similar rule to me. If he's not feeling like playing again, it's the first to go. Right now, Jaws of the Lion is on the way out and Planet X. Good games, but not going to be played. Susanna says, when I have a strongly negative experience with a game, I'd rather get rid of it than try to play it again. That's happened twice so far. I play a lot of new-to-me games, and I know, Susanna, over the last couple of years, you've played a lot of new-to-you games as well. And I'm impressed that's only happened twice. I wouldn't say that I've had strongly negative experiences with many games, but there are many games that I play, and I'm like, okay, I'm excited to talk about this game in a video. I've learned a few things from it, but I definitely don't see myself playing this game again. But if I had a strongly negative experience with a game, that would definitely be an instant call if that happened as well. Justo says, some of the biggest board game hits are party games. Is Stonemaier Games interested in publishing a party game? I think it's highly unlikely that we publish a party game. It's so far outside of what we normally do. Our sweet spot are medium weight Euro games. And we've gone a little bit lighter than that with games like Between Two Cities and Rolling Realms. And we've gone a little heavier than that with games like Scythe. But I think that's our sweet spot. We tend to stay in that range. And I'm trying to think, when someone asks a question like that, I try to think of what is my favorite party game, and if that had been pitched to me, would we have published it? So like Telestrations or Just One. If one of those games had been pitched to me, would I have actually considered publishing it? Because they do meet many of our other publishing guidelines. I don't know. It would be hard to say. I think it would be pretty unlikely. Pretty unlikely. Because if a game is that great, another publisher is going to pick it up. I can recommend it to another publisher that does make party games, and I might recommend it to them. But I don't know. I might have been a little tempted if Telestrations or Just One had been pitched to us, because they fit so many of our other requirements. So you never know. It isn't our sweet spot. Probably isn't. We probably should not be the target for designers to pitch that type of game to us. But it would be hard to turn down a Just One or a Telestrations, I think. Let's see, backing up the comments a little bit. Okay, Melissa says, I call stuff we don't play about twice a year, but there are a few that we don't play because I am the only one who likes them and I've kept them. And Megan and I have a few games like that too, where Megan really loves, I won't name the games, but there are a few games that Megan really loves that I don't get all that excited about, and a few games that I love that Megan doesn't get all that excited about. And I think we respect each other's decision to keep those games on the shelf just because we know the other person loves those games. Yeah. Hector says, what do you do with games where the... Oh, hold on. I've got a biddy eating behind me here. One second. Biddy. Okay, so Hector says... Biddy's going to join us for a minute since he was eating food that he shouldn't be eating. Hector says, what do you do with games where the box doesn't fit the Kallax? I recently got the big box edition of Quacks and it doesn't fit anywhere. Yeah, Hector, that is quite a conundrum. I recently got the game Namiji, which is the follow-up to Tokaido, and the box is so long that it doesn't fit on my Kallax. And so, I currently have it on a different shelf. I don't love putting it on a different shelf. Sometimes I put it on top of the shelf. Like I'm looking right now, I have my Blockus game. I have that on top of my Kallax shelf. But I really like the look of not having anything on top of the Kallax if I can help it. So I don't know. It's not ideal. It's not ideal to have that happen. But I think on top of the Kallax is maybe the only place that a few of those games can go. Yeah. Melissa says that her board game store has a play shelf, so I give most of her cold games or her extra games to the game store. That way, if I ever want to play it, I still can. That is brilliant, Melissa. I love that. Yeah, that's in fact, I think about that too a little sometimes where maybe I really enjoy a game, but I just haven't played it in a while. When I give it away, I might give it to a local friend who really wants it. So I know that I have access to it if I really want to play it, and it's bringing them joy because they own it then. But I love the game store method as well, that you can give a game to your local game store for their demo shelf or their play shelf. And that way you still have access to it if you want to play it. Chad also echoed that the Quacks Mega Box is super, super big. So we are designing the Wingspan nesting box, or we had designed the nesting box, so it does fit on a Calyx shelf. It's a little long, so it'll jut out a little bit, but it fits in either orientation, except for the lengthwise side of it, inside the Calyx shelf, because I definitely wanted it to fit there. Krista says, we try to play through our games once a year in an annual tournament. So if we only play a game once per year, those are the ones that we'll get rid of typically. Now, that's pretty cool. How does that annual tournament work? That sounds fun. Before I spend the rest of the time on questions, let me see if there's anything else I needed to mention. I talked about the Wingspan Birds early on, talked about the book club. I saw Doctor Strange yesterday, the new Doctor Strange movie, and enjoyed it. I don't know if I'd rank it among like the top Marvel movies, but I had fun watching it. I generally have fun watching Marvel stuff. And I've also been spending a lot of time, a little behind the scenes look, been spending a lot of time rewriting a rule book recently, which is a process that I go through when I'm working with a non-Stillmeyer or with a designer who is not myself on a game. This designer happens to be really, really good at writing rule books, which has made this process easy. But I think it's really helpful to have someone completely rewrite the rulebook, not just copy edit the rulebook, but completely rewrite it. And so I am doing that for this rulebook right now. And it's taken a while. It takes a lot of brain power to kind of to rewrite things and make sure I'm including the right things. And but anyway, this a little behind the scenes thing that's going on right now. But I enjoy that process. Just I'm letting it take a few days rather than trying to rush through it in one day, because it's a pretty big rulebook. It's one of these medium weight Euro games that I've been talking about. Michelle says that culling is difficult for her. Her husband and I prefer different types of games. I also have games that I don't play currently, but plan on playing with her son when he gets older. Ooh, yeah, that's a tricky thing when you have young kids and you want to play games with them someday, but they're not quite ready yet. That's a tricky factor. Nir says, what's the oldest game that you have in your collection? I have a few very old games from my childhood that I still enjoy playing from time to time. One is Stratego. One is Scotland Yard, and one is Blockus. I think of those, Blockus is probably the newest one, but it's still around 15 to 20 years old. But Scotland Yard and Stratego, those copies are probably 25 to 30 years old, probably, somewhere in there. Yeah. What about you? That's a great question, actually, for anyone who's watching right now. What is the oldest game in your collection? And not just like a new edition of an older game. What is the actual oldest game in your collection? Maybe it's a little ragged at this point. My copies of Scotland Yard and Stratego are certainly ragged and a bit dated, and they don't fit. Actually, Scotland Yard does fit. Stratego does not really fit. All the pieces go everywhere if I turn it sideways, and Blockus does not fit. That's on top of the shelf. Chad says, I constantly have to rotate games through my store's play library. I cull based on two things. Do I want the game back into my personal collection, or am I okay giving the game away as a prize in an event? I think there's a good question to ask if you're deciding whether or not to keep games in your collection. Ernst says, have I made any announcements about the third Wingspan expansion? I have not made any announcements yet. I have kind of said that I will probably announce the continent in June or July, early June, early July. I haven't exactly decided there yet, but I probably will announce the continent then, even though we're many months away from actually releasing the expansion. It is in production now, though. We do have the expansion in production. Chad says, we had our largest monthly game tournament over the weekend with 13 people playing Libertalia. That's pretty epic. That's awesome. Thank you for including Libertalia in your monthly tournament. That's really, really cool. Nir says that Ra is his oldest from 12 years ago, one of the earliest versions of Ra. Very, very nice. Anyone else want to chime in with your oldest game, the oldest game in your collection? Just a quick recap of what I talked about in this live cast, if you want to go back and you're joining us late. I talked about a Geekway to the West and how I played a total of 8 different games and filmed 9 videos yesterday about those games and my rankings of those games. At book club tomorrow, we have book club tomorrow at 3 o'clock on this channel, 3 o'clock central. I've done my video from this past weekend was about Clank, top 10 things I've learned from playing Clank. And I did a blog post about all-in bundles versus a la carte and asking people, some of our champions, why if they didn't order Libertalia, why they didn't, so we can learn from them. I mentioned Meeplesource's birds. They have all these birds on Kickstarter right now that you can look at. And how I'm currently rewriting a rulebook to get it ready for production. Tony says that his oldest actively played game is an original, complete, and functional copy of Stop Thief from 1980, which that game has been updated by Restoration Games much more recently. Hector says he keeps his copy of Go For It, which was published in 1986. I don't think I've ever even heard of Go For It, Hector. That's interesting. I'll have to look that one up. Go For It, published in 1986. Chad says that Tikal is his oldest game and still his favorite game. I have not played Tikal, but I have heard of that one. Victoria says that Moonshot is her oldest game. It was printed in 1997, printed as Tranquility Base a few years ago. Tranquility Base, different than Tranquility, I think. Moonshot, interesting. I've not heard of Moonshot. And Chris says that his oldest game is the Mayfair edition of Cosmic Encounters. That goes way back, doesn't it? Isn't that from like the 70s or maybe the 80s? Krista says that Milton Bradley's Samurai Swords is her oldest game. I'm getting a lot of answers here. Let me see if I can scroll through fast enough. Chad says that his oldest game is actually from his mom's youth, a game called Careers. Susanna has an off topic. He says, have I ever tried the exercise called planking? I started to try it this week and I can hold a high plank for 15 seconds. Her goal is 60 seconds, and then she's moving to the elbow plank. I've tried a little bit of planking, but I haven't done much of it, Susanna. I'm glad you're having fun with it. I do a core workout every day involving different types of sit-ups, six different types of sit-ups. But for some reason, I gravitate more towards that than the plank. I know they kind of work different muscles, but I like to do core exercises in motion rather than holding. I think I've tried planking, and I like strained myself a few times. Yoga and planking, my body doesn't respond all that well to. But the in-motion core exercises do work for me. Timo says, I have a handful of board games from my childhood from the 1980s. He has Full House from 1979, which he says his kids have now learned and enjoy from time to time. Nathan says he has a lot of old Avalon Hill and SPI games, so he's not sure which one exactly is the oldest game. Daniel says his oldest game is Steve Jackson's Illuminati from 1982, 40 years old. That's awesome, Daniel. John has a choir from 1976 and Feudal from 1967. Nathan can actually hear the lawnmower outside. Yeah, someone must be mowing the lawn somewhere. I'm surprised this mic is picking that up. Jay says he's at a local convention the first weekend of June. Oh, at a local convention the first weekend of June. What are the odds of Viticulture World shipping overnight? Probably unlikely. Yeah, we are currently on track right now for a June 1st pre-order. Viticulture World, not Libertalia, Viticulture World. No guarantees there, but we're on track for that. But it wouldn't start shipping until June 2nd, June 3rd, probably not even the next week. So the first weekend, you're probably not going to have it at that point, Jay. But yeah, sorry about that. We did have it at Geekway to the West, and I think a lot of people played it there. Curious if anyone here has played it at Geekway. Sean says, have I tried a new core exercise called Dead Bug? I have not heard of Dead Bug, Sean. No. What is Dead Bug? I'm sure I could YouTube it and see what it's all about. Looks like we're getting close to the hour mark, and I told Megan that I would help prepare lunch in a few minutes. So I should probably head over to the kitchen to take care of that in a minute. But thank you all for chatting today about all these. I love hearing about the old games in your collection. That was fun to hear about, and your methods for keeping either a slim collection or not so slim collection, and how you decide whether or not you call games. I'll post those topics on YouTube so other people can chime in there as well. But I hope you have a wonderful Wednesday, wonderful week, and I will be back. I'll see some of you maybe tomorrow for the book club at 3 o'clock, and the rest of you, hopefully, I'll see you again next Wednesday at the same time, same place. Take care. Bye.